Here it comes. The latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And we want to wish everyone a happy, healthy, and wonderful new year. This is our first Down to Earth for 2015, and we're really excited about what this year is going to bring in many areas. This show is sponsored by Discount Cab, and we thank them for their ongoing support in helping to make great shows like this possible. And I was saying just a minute ago off air that Discount Cab, which is known as Total Transit, is a locally owned company. They started in Glendale, Arizona, local being anything within 500 miles, and they, their cab company, they use the Prius, so they're eco-friendly, and they're just a great company supporting shows like this so that I can bring you Jared McKinley. He is the associate producer and co-founder for an amazing magazine called Edible Baja Arizona. It's a magazine that's all about celebrating foodways of Tucson, Arizona, and the borderlands, and that's really a gross understatement. It's about celebration of lots more than that. So welcome, Jared, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's really exciting. So I just want to do a little bit of my own shout-out about this publication, if I may.
Okay.
It's your show, but I really want to be able to say, so many people say print media is on the way out, print is dying. And the fact is, magazines are getting smaller, newspapers are shrinking, people are downsizing, but you're not.
Some magazines are getting smaller. Some are not.
Edible Baja is not.
No, we're not. We're doing really well. It's if you take a look at the magazines that are doing well, there are some. And it's usually the ones that are design-oriented. They're making more than just a magazine. They're making something you want to keep. And I think that's what we've really tried to do is, you know, we spend a lot of money on editorial and on photography and art.
And it shows.
Yeah.
Every time you have a cover, you want to have it on your coffee table and show people when they come over and talk about it. My husband immediately noticed the truck on the December issue.
Oh, yeah. That was intentional.
That was intentional. And he said, oh, my God, look at that. And I, of course, thought it was a beautiful red truck, but he knew exactly what year and make. And I'm like, oh, what a cute dog and cute pumpkins. And he was all about the truck.
It was intentional for a couple of reasons. Of course, we want to attract more male readers, which, you know, we have slightly more female than male readers. But also, our magazine is really about supporting quality. It's not just about food or even just about local. It's really about a higher quality of life.
So let's talk about what the magazine is, because okay. I have been known to, I know what it is, and go through a whole show and then have someone say, well, you never really gave him time to say, what is Edible Baja Arizona? So tell us about the magazine.
We live in a region that I think has been served poorly by the media. Whenever you hear about Arizona, when you hear about the borderlands, it's always very, very negative. It's about illegal crossing. It's about drugs. It's about our crazy politicians in Phoenix. But they never talk about everything else. And it's akin to if you took the Bay Area of California and only talked about the crime in Oakland, and you use that to define the whole area.
Right.
It's a terrible thing to do to us. And especially on an international border where there's all this amazing cultural exchange. And so, you know, we want to change that dialogue, but using food as a way to talk about the area is great, because it doesn't matter who you are. Everyone understands a chimichanga, you know. I'll talk to people who, you know, I probably have no political alignment with at all. And we can talk a lot, because you talk about food, everyone eats. And, so it's a really nice way to pull people together. And it's also, everyone's concerned about food right now. We have some serious issues coming up, and it's going to affect everybody. It's no longer going to be just a liberal thing to eat a certain way. You know, we're all going to have to start thinking about sustainability when it comes to food.
And it's coming faster and sooner and harder. I mean, even in Arizona this week, it's been phenomenal that we had inches of snow. And then in a couple of weeks, it'll be 70 or 80. We had the longest summer, hottest summer. So it is that. But let's talk about, you're very active and very interested in the piece of it that is, you highlight locally owned businesses, local bakeries, local breweries, local recycling companies. Mm-hmm. Why the focus on local, and why is that so important? Not just to a strong local economy, but to me, it's the gateway to having a strong national economy.
Yes, it is. You know, almost everything that I realized at one point, almost everything I care about personally, which, whether it's the environment or whether it's social justice or whether it's whatever, that it almost always boils down to local economy, really. And, you know, we a lot of us complain about what's going on, and then we go shop at Walmart. Well, what do you do when you shop at Walmart? I mean, not to, you know, point out one company, but
it's okay with me. Believe
but,
me.
You know, we all complain about the injustice, and then we go ahead and then give people our money who are doing us harm. And you know, the funny thing is not all local businesses are great people, you know, and they're not even necessarily good. But the one thing that the one major difference that I like to point out is that local businesses, no matter, you can have a jerk down the street that's selling something and you buy it from him. He's not going to be lobbying against you in Washington.
Right.
And that is what the big corporations do, is they take that money and then they lobby against us. They lobby against our interests and for their own. And it's almost always about money, you know, keeping money in their hands and keeping it out of our hands, or lobbying against our health, you know, for the sake of convenience. Almost everything that's gone wrong with our food system, with almost everything, it boils down to convenience. And so it does cost a little more money to buy things locally. But if you think about it, if you buy something locally, that person, whoever that person is paying tax dollars, you know, they're spending tax dollars locally, which affects us, that helps us fix our roads and educate our children. But it also, you know, they're shopping locally too. They go and they buy something, you know, hopefully they're not going to Walmart too, but, you know, but they might be, but at least like that money's staying here. It's not going away. It's staying in our community.
And the percentages, like I've had Kimber Lanning from Local First on the show, and she's internationally known because she lets facts get in the way and she talks about it. But when you talk about the local economy and why Edible Baja, I want to go back to something you said two questions ago about why Edible Baja is a different twist on the news, even as it relates to border issues. How does food and a beautiful, colorful magazine help to contribute to what I call the overall good health of our community? I mean, Jared, everybody's talking about Edible Baja. It's a national phenomenon.
Yeah.
Edible New Jersey's talking about it. Edible Pittsburgh is talking about it.
Yeah.
So how does that impact what you refer to as the social justice piece because of food?
Well, the one thing I want to highlight is the reason that Edible Baja Arizona is doing well is because our region's very cool. I'm very, very...
That's a great way to say it.
I mean,
it is
not
very
that, you
cool.
You know, New York's cool, but we're cooler.
New York's a food desert.
Yeah. No, this region's amazing. There's a lot of, you know, again, this goes back to media, but the media always represents Arizona as being kind of behind the times. We're not. We're actually kind of ahead
especially
of the times.
Especially Tucson.
Especially Tucson. Native Seed Search has been doing their thing for decades, and they're still the only seed company in the world that I know of that focuses on their own region, and they're, you know, saving the genetics of our food here. So, I mean, there's so much very forward thinking going on here, but I think what we did is we kind of like pulled it all together and let everyone know about each other, whether it's like Iskashita, you know, Iskashita.
Yes, they've had them on the show.
I mean, another amazing group. We just have some brilliant people here, and maybe it's the desert. I don't know. The plants are cooler here. I'm a botanist. That's why I moved here. Something about this environment makes the plants cooler than everywhere else too. And I think it has that effect on people. Makes you, you know, the lack of water and the lack of easily made comfort makes us very resourceful.
And you hit on a huge issue. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's going to become more and more important. So right. One of your biggest fans, which absolutely cracks me up and I love it, is I think he's an icon and a guru and I love to embarrass him, is Gary Nabhan.
Oh, yeah.
And he said at the food series for the U of A, he talked about edible baja in the presentation. I believe you were there. Mm-hmm. And he said, I feel like it's my godchild. I mean, that's coming from Gary Flippin' Nabhan, well, who's written like 27 books about food scarcity, food security, the water issues.
He's very, very close to us. I mean, he's on an editorial board.
Right.
So he likes to refer to himself as the weird uncle of edible baja Arizona. Oh, by the way, I love it that people affectionately call us edible Baja. I like to say it's edible Baja Arizona. Just
I know,
like you wouldn't say edible South for edible South Dakota.
I do it too. Edible Baja Arizona. We have to point that out because it's
people. Yeah, the only reason I say that is that some people maybe one day they'll be in edible Baja California. That might be confusing, but anyway. But
they won't wax it like you guys are waxing it. So that's another thing. So Gary's on your editorial staff. Uh-huh. When you pick, your magazine is what I would call content rich. It's one of my favorite phrases. There's something in it for everyone. How in God's name, I'm sure everybody and their uncle wants to be featured now in Edible Baja, Arizona. Let's hashtag that one. And how do you take the morass and what do you do to decide who goes in and who you're going to feature? Tell us a little inside scoop.
That's a good question. Actually, when we first came out, the first magazine, which was only like, how many pages was that now? I can't even remember, 70-something pages, 76 pages, something like that. Everyone's like, oh, you already told all the stories in Arizona and Southern Arizona.
Goodness.
I was like, oh no, honey. Here we have so every issue we have to actually cut a story usually because there's so much to tell. But there's four of us who really decide. It's, you know, Megan Kimball is our editor.
Right.
Gary, Doug, Doug Biggers is the publisher.
Right.
I'm the associate publisher. The four of us are the main people who decide what goes in the magazine. And of course our art director has some visual say, but you know, we decide what goes in. And we were very carefully trying to fit in all the demographics. You know, we want to have a wide demographic, you know, speak to not just people in the foothills or not just people downtown or not just women or men you know, in fact, we've started to put in bilingual articles. So we have we didn't do it this coming issue, but almost every issue we have a Spanish an article in Spanish that we translate online. So we're trying to reach a wide variety of people.
There is so much going on in Southern Arizona and down around the border. I mean, if you just talk about all of the things that Monzo is up to and the wonderfulness of the community gardens and things that are happening in community schools and local restaurants sourcing things locally. So tell me about how does a brewery make the cut and why? I thought it was a great article.
Well, you know, the one thing I would say is we're not always about locally sourcing. You know, we cover restaurants like El Menudo is a restaurant we covered recently, and they don't locally source, but it is a local business. It's been run by the same family for a long time.
Long time, decades.
Yeah, almost, I mean, getting close to being centuries. Rosa's is a restaurant that we probably will cover at some point. They've been around like 90 years.
DeGrazia used to go there. For whoever people remember, DeGrazia's studio is still up on Swan, but he used to frequent Rosa's, and he's been dead probably 30 years.
The stories we like to cover are not just about, it's about regionalism.
Right.
You know,
right.
So, you know, and I don't like to be a food snob. In fact, you know, every once in a while I like to eat at places just because they're not locally sourcing. But if, you know, it's about supporting the community. It's really what it goes to. And eventually maybe we can all get to that point where we can locally source. Right now it's a luxury. It's a luxury for a restaurant to locally source because it's expensive. Unfortunately, it is. So maybe someday we will stop subsidizing corn syrup production and we will start subsidizing small farmers. But at this point, we are still giving the big guys the money.
It would change the map of the country.
Right.
It would change the face of the country.
And
subsidies.
I don't fault any small business for being unable to locally source. That said, of course, we want to very much celebrate the places that do. Breweries make it because they're locally brewing. And some of them are doing some interesting things. I mean, of course, you have Borderlands is always trying to throw in local ingredients into their
right.
the mix. And actually, they're all doing it now. They're all like working with the local wineries and using the wine barrels from the wineries. They're using local wheat. A lot of them are putting white Sonora wheat into, which is not only a locally grown grain, but it's a local heirloom variety that the Mission's brought. So, they are starting to get really creative about that.
You know, and I think it's important, especially since this is the first show of 2015 and we get new listeners all the time. What I learned from Local First years ago is that when you have a locally owned business, it really isn't all about the local sourcing. However, if you're going to get a sign printed, you're probably going to go to the sign company down the street or somebody you met at Local First.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to use somebody's child if you need a runner. Mm-hmm. You're going to hire them. That's the difference to me about the money staying in our community. If you need a printer, again, Local First, great connection. Oh, yeah, well, they're in the Local First group, and you're going to use that. So it's not just about local sourcing, but it's about creating those important local business partnerships to me and the money staying here. There's a huge, if you own a restaurant, I think a huge challenge in supply because you want to have what you said is on the menu every night. You can't always count on local sources.
Yeah. Although that's starting to change too. Restaurants are starting to become more flexible and being able to react to the changes. But that's not just up to the restaurants. It's actually up to us as consumers to be able to go to a place and be okay if it's not exactly the same. I think we're really got to change our attitudes. And really, the consumers are the most important key element in this because they're the ones that spend the money. And that's the thing that just really has made me feel, as after starting this magazine, has made me feel like I've done more for my community than ever before. I feel like it's more important than voting. I still vote, but like I've learned that where I spend my money has so much power, and I've seen it now. I've seen it working with these businesses and these small businesses supporting each other and people starting to pay attention and not go to chains as much. It's having a huge impact on our community in Tucson. And so, I want to see that continue, not just be a trend, but to, become the rule.
And the easiest thing to me as a consumer, I couldn't agree with you more. I call it the power of the purse. I mean, we have all the power if we just woke up and realized that we did and didn't go here and did go there. To me, the easiest thing to do if you want to change one thing, which I'm always about, small step, big impact, just take one small step. Why would you ever go into anything but a locally owned restaurant in Tucson, Arizona?
Yeah.
Because you could start one part of the year and go to a different restaurant almost to the end of the year and never have to worry about repeating the restaurants.
Yeah.
I mean, there are an never
ending.
And
even if you want junk food, there's Lucky Wishbone.
That's right. And my friend Arnie owns that, so we can't call it junk food. I mean, he owns one of them, Arnie Jacobson, and he's just like.
Oh, I love Lucky Wishbone.
They have the best shrimp sauce. My husband says he only eats the shrimp so that he has something to put the shrimp sauce on. Their cocktail sauce is really epic.
Oh, that's
it
great.
Really is, but you're absolutely right.
Now, there's something for everyone locally. Yeah. And you get Sonoran dogs.
I went
to the Sonoran carts. Those are fantastic.
Have I ever? Yes.
Yeah.
Have I ever? And I have the Mrs. Greenmobile, so I'm like, oh my God, I wonder if anybody's going to see me pulling up in this car having a Sonoran dog. They're also great. Food trucks are making it here in Tucson.
Yeah.
It's really fun. And you know, I'm old. So I loved Cheers. And sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name and
right.
they're always glad you came. Well, I use that quote now, and some people look at me like, is she speaking English? What is she talking about? But in locally owned restaurants, I went to Pastiche today.
Mm-hmm.
Pat comes and gives you a big hello.
Great.
Renee's Organic Oven, the beat goes on. Poco and Mom's,
yeah.
they hug the stuffins out of you at those places. And it's just, It just feels good.
Yeah.
Who doesn't
that? The little one, or formerly called the little Poca Cosa, talking about hugs.
Little Poca Cosa.
Oh, man.
talking about hugs,
and she'll turn up that music and she goes, if you don't like Barry Manilow, you're lying. I mean, you don't get that in a chain.
Oh, my God. That's a good one. Okay. I want to talk about... You got me there on that one. So before we run out of time, and we have plenty of time left, it is a free magazine and it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other unique things, and I want to know if any other edible blank is doing this, is you actually have offered people a subscription so they can get it free. It's beautifully displayed in many locations in Arizona, Southern Arizona, especially. What's the subscription model? I love it.
Well, you know, I think all the edibles are trying to do it, and some of them do it a lot. Like, actually, it makes a lot of sense in Manhattan for them to do it, because Manhattan, you don't want to schlep stuff around, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
So it's more convenient for the story. I think for us is that we are so quickly starting to sell so many of them, and we didn't really try that hard to begin with, because. You know, we really were working on the model of having the advertisement for local businesses fund the magazine. But so many people came to us and they said, we want to support you. And we didn't want to just take money from people. So we said, well, buy a subscription. And, you know, it kind of helps pay for things. It's a small drop in the bucket, but it helps.
And it'll grow.
Yeah. And, it's growing fast. I mean, we're getting like about a subscription an hour right now. Which is, you know, pretty fast.
That's pretty fast, is right.
So yeah, it's starting to pick up, and it's a nice, we have some added convenience for this. You know, first of all, you don't have to hunt it down.
Right.
And this magazine is so popular, the second we get it out on the street, it just vaporizes. And, so that's a real challenge for us, actually, distributing this magazine is trying to keep up with the demand. We're going to lift our subscription. I mean, our distribution numbers up this year, because so many people want to read the magazine, but you can get it delivered to your
house. So many people want to give Mrs. Green a copy of it. Have you seen this? I'm like, what do you think? I live in a cave. I love this magazine. It's amazing.
So you get it delivered to your house, but we are also, for our subscribers, we're offering these, VIP cards. So it's edible VIP, and, it's our way of, thanking our subscribers and our advertisers, actually, and connecting them more.
So what is that program?
So our advertisers are offering various discounts. Not all of them, but most of them will be doing this. And they're all varying discounts. But if you're an edible VIP, you can bring in your discount and get a yummy card and get a 15% discount off your meal or whatever.
And who doesn't like that?
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic.
And how many, can you disclose on air how many advertisers you have? Hundreds.
Nearly 300. Is where we're approaching about 300. I mean, it's not a set in stone number, because there's people who come in and out.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I try to get them to do it regularly, because marketing is all about, keeping very regular. But people will take a month off, or some places aren't open in the summer or whatever it is. But it's about 300 that we have.
Right, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Now, what about, let's go back to the very beginning. You said Doug Biggers is the publisher. And did you co-found it with him, or did he start and then you joined him? and there's a second part to this question.
So first of all, I will say Doug is got publishing in his blood.
Okay.
Right? I mean, I even met someone that knew him in high school, and she was like, oh yeah, he was doing that stuff in high school. Like, newsletters.
It's in his DNA.
Yeah, it's in his DNA. But when he called me, he was responding to a Facebook post where I was just talking about homesteading, and he was like, I think we should do business together. And at the time, I was trying to start a magazine. I was going to do it myself.
It.
I didn't have any money to Edible's a licensed brand, by the way. So it's it's totally locally owned. We own 100% of the magazine, but we bought the right to use the name Edible. And we did that for two reasons. One, I didn't want anyone starting an edible in this community. And two, it's nice if you're from Seattle and you come here, you know what it is.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So
there's the branding aspect that is really great.
But I didn't have the money for edible at the time. I was influenced by them, but I didn't have the money for it. So I was going to do my own thing. And then he called, the founder of the Tucson Weekly calls me up and says he wants to start a business. I couldn't believe it. And
that was a good day.
I told him what I was doing, and he was like, oh my God, we should do this. And so, ever since then, and we heard that Gary had wanted to do it too. But we pulled him in, and then Megan came in, and yeah, just started built from there.
So when you started, did you have the vision and did you know from the get-go that it was going to really go? I'm not really trying to exaggerate here. It is the number one edible in the country.
I'm a very driven person. So yes, I did know.
You had a big dream.
Only because I'm crazy. Like, I mean, you have to remember, I was starting to work on this when I didn't have any money. I'm just like, I'm going to start a magazine. And I love that.
It's a totally different show.
So luckily the insanity, everyone kind of came up behind me.
It was contagious.
Yeah. I think we've been dying for this. You know, the thing is, like, we're not covering all these stories we're covering. These are not new stories. I mean, there's a couple new restaurants here and there, but most of it's like, you know, Brad Lancaster has been doing his thing
he was one of my first show guests in 7 years ago.
He's been doing it forever. And like I said, Native Seed Search and all these people doing really cool things in Tucson. But I think what we did is we kind of pulled everyone together
and highlighted the spotlight on them
so that those people over there saw what these people over here are doing. Because that's one challenge we have, being a community that was built the mid-century, because they started designing neighborhoods to be so sprawled out. And so it's hard to pull everyone together.
And Jason Tankersley, he's so cool. He was one of my very first sponsors and stays with me today. What a good friend. And if for people that don't know, he owns landfills and is doing top of the line composting.
Yeah, green stuff.
Tanks green stuff.
And he's using what would be garbage. People who are doing this, who are turning our problems into resources.
Solutions.
That's amazing.
Yes, yes.
You know, I really believe that most problems have those kind of solutions where, you know, we can turn these things into a benefit. A lot of people ask me, why are you encouraging farming in the desert? Right? Good question. And I do support that, but here's the reason. We live in an arid land. In about 20 or so years, everyone's going to be living in arid lands. We are solving the problems now for the future. Now, the way we're doing it in some parts of the country is not sustainable. Like the way we grow lettuce, you know, is not really sustainable. So we need to change our ways. We need to change the way we grow. I think, you know, there's so much, innovation that needs to happen and can. So I look at it in a positive way and just say, hey, look, you know, here we are. We have we have this problem to solve. How can we grow grain with less water?
And I'll tell you, they're going to be looking at how much corn they're growing to feed animals in the not too distant future. And that's one of the things that Gary made the point. Everybody was talking about, like, in the future. Well, in the future is going to be about 2 years away for some of the water supplies. I mean, the shortages are going to hit.
Yeah.
I remember a statistic that he gave me, which was 2,300 counties suffered from extreme drought in this country in 2013. So I Googled it. Well, do you know how many counties there are in the country? Only something like, 30,000. It was a huge percentage of counties that suffered extreme drought. So it's really, we better be looking at sustainable agriculture.
Worldwide, most humans live in arid land.
Yeah. And we have to, and you're helping with that myopia that we have. Okay, so we have 1 minute, and I am telling you, this time I cannot stand it. So with us today was Jared McKinley. He is the associate producer and co-founder for an amazing magazine called Edible Baja Arizona. You can check it out at edible.com/BajaArizona.com. You can subscribe. Your Facebook page is Edible Baja Arizona. Edible Baja Arizona. I found all of it. It was easy. Next week, Judith Curry on Saturday. She is known as she's the anti-climate change person. It's going to be a great show. And Shannon Sartine from Scraps to Scraps is going to be on for our Down to Earth on January 13th. Everybody, Happy New Year. Be safe out there and make it a great green day. Thanks.